irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I was talking last week to my good friend Gary Rudenko, and he said, you have to have these guys come on your show. They make some amazing guitars and basses, and they're just extraordinary. So we went down. I said, sure, let's go ahead and do it. And we went by the store today, and I got to play them even before the show, and I was blown away. They're just some of the most beautiful basses. I want to welcome to the show, and I want to make sure I get Howard's name right, Pat Wilkins and Howard Ulate.
It's Ulyate.
Ulyate. Ulyate. I'm going to write this phonetically.
Ul as an ultimate. Yate is a gate.
Ulyate. Anyway, Pat makes guitars and basses, Wilkins guitars and basses, and there's some amazing stuff in there. He's got we just heard recently, too, and I guess we can talk about it, too, that Peter Cetera is using him as an endorsee for those.
That's right.
And they're really well-made guitars and basses. And then Howard makes the pickups for his for those, but you can also get his pickups for your own guitars.
This is true.
So that's very cool. But anyway, what I was intrigued by, I had seen his bass. He had a bass that he used to bring to the amp show, Lonnie's amp show, and it has a picture of the Sgt. Pepper album of all the people on it. And it's like this. I remember walking by and like, this is cool. That's a nice. I like that. That really works. And he has that. He still has it. He didn't sell that.
Absolutely. I'll never get rid of that.
That is very cool. But he brought two other basses in here that are very nice too, from his personal collection. And but first of all, let's talk a little bit about your background. And I was reading up at early on. You started working at Acoustic Amps.
Well, when I first moved to California, I got a job at Acoustic Amps building their speaker cabinets.
Very cool.
And I worked there for about 6 months. The owner of Acoustic was the nephew of one of the owners at Schecter Guitars.
Oh, wow.
And so they kind of traded me like a baseball player.
Oh, so Schecter was around at that time when Acoustic...
Schecter came into play about 6 months or so after I started working at Acoustic.
Okay. Oh, very cool. Yeah. And then you studied, with Schecter. You actually, Tom Anderson was there, right, too? So you worked with him?
Tom Anderson was the head designer at Schecter.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first went to work at Schecter, they had me in the wood shop cutting out bodies and necks and getting them ready as parts, because Schecter was mainly a parts company. They sold pickups and bridges and tuning gears and bodies and necks. Their R&D was putting guitars together to make sure that all their parts worked properly.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a few guitars, and people loved them, and they started selling guitars because people wanted them to make guitars for them. So Tom was the head designer. When they decided to put the guitar shop together, they brought me out of the wood shop and brought me into the guitar shop itself, where they taught me how to paint guitars and put guitars together as well.
Yeah, well, Gary was telling me, too, that you were quite famous as you painting guitars and doing finishes for a lot of different people.
Well, the paint shop is the business I've had since 1984,
mm-hmm.
and it's what I learned first when I went over to the guitar shop at Schecter. When I went off on my own in 84, I was one of the only guys in the country that was offering finish work for other people.
Mm-hmm.
If you had finish work done, you were doing it for yourself and not for other people. And I saw a niche, and I offered my services to other people, and my business grew that way.
Well, that's cool. But you do like really fancy and custom type of finishes, right?
I do. I do a lot of the custom shop finishes that you see, and then I have a series of artists that I also work with. One that I would mention is the woman that painted the original Eric Clapton, The Fool.
Wow.
Her name is Marieke, and she's still around, and she and I work together. And so when she has artwork that she puts on the guitar, she sends it over to me, and then I do the clear coat with her. And
Very cool. I wondered what happened to all them.
She's still around. And she's just neat old hippie woman that's still a beautiful and wonderful artist.
Mm-hmm.
She and I have worked on about six guitars together, six Wilkins guitars that have her artwork on them. And unfortunately, they've all gone to Japan, so you won't be able to see them here in the United States.
I'd love to see them. I'm trying to think which, because it was four artists that worked on The Fool.
They're originally the two artists that that did the well, you know, I'm not really sure exactly how it turned out to be. The group that painted the theater in Hollywood, they also did the Apple building in the UK, and then Marieke did The Fool. That she was the one who did that by herself. That was
The guitar was pretty much her by herself.
It was only her work. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because there's been people talking about there was somebody did the pick guard, somebody did, you know, there was different, but it was
she
her.
Did it all. She did all. She did Ginger Baker's drum head, and she did Jack Bruce's six string bass.
That's right. I remember seeing that. That was beautiful. Yeah. Oh, that's great. No, that's really good. Well, let's talk a little bit about now the Wilkins guitars, because you mentioned on the website, which is, by the way, www.wilkinsguitars.com, that you can get a vintage guitar, in a sense. So what entails, how would you define a vintage guitar? It's obviously you're building new guitars, but you basically got the science down to what makes a great vintage sounding guitar or bass. And so how would you describe that? How would you categorize that?
Well, for me, the first step of making any vintage instrument is making it feel comfortable when you start playing it immediately. So there are several things that I do to treat necks and to treat the body in order so that when you put it in your hands and you play it, it feels comfortable. It feels like it's been played already for 30, 40, 50 years. So that's how I approach building a vintage guitar. I also, I use parts that still have vintage characteristics to them. That's where Howard comes in. Howard and I have been working on making pickups that have vintage characteristics. And he's nailed it for me. That's why I use his pickups exclusively on all my basses now.
Well, real quick, since I have you set up with one, you have this is a Wilkins jazz bass with the jazz bass type pickups.
It's a jazz bass style bass.
Yes, and this is an Alder body, maple neck with a rosewood fingerboard, a standard jazz type of bridge. And we'll talk a little bit about that because there's a reason why you use this type of a bridge. And then your pickups are on here. Play a little bit so they get an idea of what the tone is on this.
Oh, here we go.
sound that you're using there, is that both pickups open with both the pickups. Treble open? So that's just everything wide open.
Then bridge pickup. And neck pickup.
Yeah, and you're getting a good range, and also too the overtones of the strings. Mm-hmm. Then those are your custom made.
My design strings,
right.
Made for me by LaBella.
Mm-hmm. And but the overtones are just great. It's just got a good overall sound. And okay, but let's ask Howard right now about the pickups. Your approach to that. How do you get that? One of the things I've always noticed, especially on guitars, is. The PAF sound, which every like for example for humbuckers, or even the earlier '60s Strat sounds and Tele sounds, the output was lower to get more tone. If they tried to boost like later on, DiMarzio made super distortions, they got a lot of gain out of it, but you lost the tone and the it didn't have a lot of tone to it. It was just like full out. If you're playing fully distorted and you're playing just cranked, it worked. But if you're going to try to get any subtlety or tone or whatever. So I noticed that when we were playing over at the Bass Exchange this afternoon, that bass, especially the one with the active electronics, all the basses had a lot of output. So how did you get the output and still get the tone?
Well, that's the trick.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants a lot of output. They want that amp to be hit hard, but they don't want a dark sound. And so through a lot of experimentation, I figured out a kind of wire to use, copper wire that goes around the magnets,
mm-hmm.
To use, and a winding pattern, the winding that goes around the magnets.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to scatter winding, and it just allows me to overwind the pickups, which just kind of gives me more of everything,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better term.
Do you use different type of wire for like the treble pickup and the bass pickup?
No.
To get using the same.
It's the same wire.
But is it the amount of windings?
The amount of windings. And actually, I don't want to give away too much, but...
No, I understand.
It's actually the insulation around the wire.
Mm-hmm.
It actually gives me more space between the two bits of copper wire.
Mm-hmm.
So I get less capacitance, which gives me a brighter sound.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if that's too technical, but...
Yeah, that makes sense.
So and really, when you overwind these pickups, they do get a little darker.
Mm-hmm.
They are a little bit darker than my old jazz bass. But it's, in my opinion, it's a bass. Let it be a little bit darker. Let it sound like a bass. And then strings have gotten so much better.
Yeah.
Especially these strings. It almost kind of makes up for it.
Right. And you were mentioning, we were talking before the show, and Pat was mentioning too, the woods and stuff can affect that too. So can you can make the bass brighter by what you're using in terms of the materials?
Well, yes. And for instance, I mean, the most simple answer to that question is the difference between a maple neck with a maple fingerboard and a maple neck with a rosewood fingerboard. The maple neck is a harder, or the maple fingerboard is a harder material, and it's going to have a higher tone to it. So if you want a nice high mid-range attack out of your bass neck, nice focused mid-range attack, use a maple neck with a maple fingerboard. If you want a warmer sound to your bass, use maple with a rosewood fingerboard.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many different kinds of rosewoods out there. Everybody likes Brazilian. They tout that as the ultimate rosewood. There's also Madagascar rosewood, which is very similar to Brazilian rosewood in tone and color. And Indian rosewood is what 90% of the world's guitars use on their fingerboards.
Yeah.
And it's all in play. Neck construction also, we were talking earlier. I use a quarter sawn maple approach to my core of my necks, which also is a little bit brighter.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more stable because the wood is not bending into the quarter sawn structure of the neck. And so it's a little bit brighter, it's a little tighter sounding, and you combine that with either a maple fingerboard or a rosewood fingerboard, and you've got two completely different sounding necks.
Now, I know that Brazilian and even Madagascar and Indian rosewood are now becoming really scarce. Have you used other types of woods? Do you, for example, do you make an ebony fingerboard? Have you made one? Or what else? Is there alternatives now?
I don't use ebony. I haven't used, well, I take it back. I did build one base with an ebony fingerboard a few years ago. And while I liked it, it was, to me, it was a little bit too bright.
Mm.
I didn't particularly like the tone of it. I have used Palfera when I was at Schecter many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Palfera was the number one selling wood that we use for our fingerboards. It's a good solid maple. I mean, it's a good solid neck. It has similar tonal qualities to maple, and it has a little warmth like rosewood.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently built a base that had a maple neck and a wingy fingerboard.
Mm.
And that base sounds absolutely amazing. The warmth that I got out of the wingy was just superior to practically mm-hmm. anything I've built in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to mention, though, a couple of the bases that of your bases over at Gary's shop, it was, I forget what the finish is, but it looked...
Satin.
No, not the satin, but not this, the satin finish, but the fretboard was a maple, but it was burnt maple.
Right.
Burnt?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't mention that. I use roasted maple.
Roasted maple.
Yeah, that's what it was. Roasted maple.
It's beautiful. I took some pictures, and I'll post those of over at the shop at the Base Exchange, and I tried to get it. I mean, my camera, I don't think it'll do it justice, but you got to see it. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful roasted maple. That's a nice doing that. Is that it still has the characteristic of maple, or does it mellow it out? Do you think
it really does mellow it out? It warms out maple. You don't lose your mid range focus, but what you get is you get a lot more fundamental low end mm-hmm. out of the wood itself, and the beauty of it, like you said, if there's any figure involved in the wood at all, it just brings it out. The process is what they do is they put this wood in an oven and remove the oxygen from the oven. It's a sealed oven. And then they bake the wood to a specific temperature. So what happens is it sucks all the moisture out of the wood, and it lightens the wood in weight. And the process of pulling the moisture out and cooking it at the same time, it's... It caramelizes the wood, so it strengthens the organic.
So it's similar to, like, I know that Martin and Taylor do a process to their soundboards to make it age it.
It's torrefied. That's the technical name for it. It's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing.
I mean, that one that's over at the store with the roasted maple, that is so beautiful. It's flamed, like it has like a little... flame on it, so there's a flame pattern throughout it. But it sounded really, I mean, it also sounded really great. But talking about woods, let's talk a little bit about that. Now, these bases that you brought in are alder, and you use ash sometimes. What other woods do you use, and why? What's the difference in sound for people that are looking for, why would they get an alder over a maple or an ash?
All right. Alder is my first wood of choice. And I also offer roasted alder, too.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I like alder is because it's, for me anyway, for what I do, it's got the flattest response. It's got all the low end that I'm looking for. It's got a really nice mid-range without being overly focused. And it has a nice top end that isn't harsh mm-hmm. or overly bright.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's my first wood of choice. Ash... I like ash as well. What I found with ash is it has nice low end, it's got nice top end, but it's scooped in the middle. So for gospel players, the guys who do a lot of slapping and that kind of music, ash works really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
I have used mahogany in the past, but for me, I think mahogany is a little dark for basses. And then you've got tops. I mean... just different tops. Combine a backwood with a top wood, then you're creating all sorts of different variances to
right.
The
sound. So, like, we see it a lot in guitars. You use a mahogany, like a Les Paul mahogany with a maple top.
Exactly.
And that kind of gives you a little bit of both,
right.
Both worlds. So, but mainly Ash and Alder use. Because I know, for example, as a guitar player, we've known for a while that, again, like a maple neck on a Strat with an Alder body gives you that 50s Strat sound like Clapton.
Right.
And the rosewood neck with the Alder body gave you like the Hendrix or the 60s style. It got that kind of that tone.
Well, I mean, you can hear it in their playing where Clapton has a brighter, edgier sound, and Hendrix has more of a warm, fat, fuller sound.
Yeah, yeah. But the same thing with the basses. Now, the jazz basses were, and they were the Alder was used a lot by Fender, too, but both the jazz and P basses were Alder, or were they Ash?
Well, Fender's always used Ash and Alder.
They would, whatever it was.
Whatever they felt was appropriate for the model they were making. Mm-hmm. Fender's also used a lot of poplar in the past.
Wow. Okay. Have you ever used poplar?
No, but I owned a 73 Fender jazz bass that was all poplar.
How did you like this? How would you characterize that sound?
I liked it. It was a good sound. It was heavy. One of the reasons why I didn't particularly like it. I would guess that Geddy Lee's original jazz bass is probably a poplar body.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's pull out the... we have a P bass with a hybrid P jazz pickup, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. While we're changing the basses, let's talk a little bit about this this bridge that you're using on the Vintage, because it's a lighter bridge than, you know, than some of the heavier badass type of, or like the hip shop bridges, which have more sustain.
Well, and I use that specifically because the bridge itself is thinner. It's a cosmetic thing, but it turns out to have a dual purpose for me. I like the way it looks on my Vintage instruments, but because the metal itself is thinner, it allows the wood woodiness to come through in my sound. Now, like you mentioned, the hip shot bridges are thicker. They also have a great sound as well, and they offer that bridge in brass and aluminum. I choose to use the aluminum when I use that particular bridge. Yes.
Okay.
And I do that also because it allows the wood to the tone of the wood to pass through. They call it more transparent, and I agree with them.
Well, I know in the old days when the badass bridges came out and they were brass was really popular, it was for the sustain. But you get plenty of sustain. And even these basses with this lighter bridge that you're using, which is more like the old Vintage Fender type of bridge or whatever, you're getting plenty of sustain, too. It's really, it's not that dead or doesn't decay as much as you would think it would.
It's because there's great contact between the bridge and the wood.
Yeah, and the Alder body's vibrating. You're getting
absolutely
more vibration.
Yeah.
Okay, now we have this P bass, and this is a rosewood. Now this has flat wounds, right? And
yes,
they're your flat wounds.
No, these are the Lobella. They're the brand new low tension strings.
Low tension strings.
Yes.
So it's maple neck, rosewood fingerboard, and Alder.
Alder body.
Alder
correct.
Body. So let's take a listen of this guy.
That's the P pickup. Okay, now we're going to switch to the J pickup. And you can see the position of this J pickup slightly different. It's moved closer.
Yeah, it's farther away from the jazz bass pickup. It's farther away.
Yeah, it's farther away from the bridge, closer to the neck.
Kind of a warmer, definitely a warmer.
Warmer
sound.
And fatter.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Then both pickups together.
Good. Roll off the tone a little bit. You know, should get like an upright type of feel.
And if you mute.
So it's getting all of those classic sounds.
Absolutely.
That you want. Now, one of the things we were talking a little bit before, if you can tell me a little about it, is the spacing of the pickups and where you have the pickups located. Because it's kind of different than what I've seen from other bass.
It's very different. As far as I know, no one makes anything like this. I did it because I've played PJs for many, many years. I've never been happy with the sound of a P bass mm-hmm. when you put a J pickup next to it. There's always been this less than P bass sound out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to figure out why it was and what caused that. And what I came up with is there's some kind of phasing going on between the interaction of the two pickups. So I started playing around with the position of the J pickup. The last thing I wanted to do was move that J pickup closer to the bridge, because by itself that J pickup just, I don't think, sounds great anyway. And mm-hmm. the closer you move it to the bridge, I think the worse it was going to sound. So I brought it closer to the P bass pickup, and what I discovered was this wonderful thing that happened. Now the P bass sounds like a P bass pickup again, and there's a J bass in there. Now, what I also found out was that now I can use that J bass pickup by itself, and it sounds good by itself. So I got the best of both worlds. I got a real good sounding P bass pickup now, and I got a jazz bass pickup that I can use all night long if I want to, if I'm playing the right kind of music.
Yeah. Now, let me ask Howard something. The jazz bass pickups,
yep.
are they the same, or are they different types of windings for the different for the trout, the bridge or the neck?
Well, for this one in particular, this jazz bass pickup is actually a split coil. If you were to remove this cover, you would see that there was two individual pickups underneath here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my personal opinion that I just like it to see four or an even number of coils. My problem with PJ style setups was always when you had both pickups on, you had three coils, and you would get some helm canceling, but not enough.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And they just didn't mix together well.
Well, that seems that would make sense. The four individual coils yep. would make a difference in the overall sound.
Absolutely.
Too.
It does. There's less of that phasing.
But the jazz one is just single, it's one big. That's not separate.
Those are single coils.
Yeah,
single coils. But
these are split coils.
Split coils.
So in other words, there's like a coil for two strings.
Okay.
A coil for two strings, but under one cover.
Okay.
And controlled by one volume control.
Mm-hmm.
So cosmetically, it just looks like a jazz bass pickup. And when you use this by itself, it's hum canceling as well.
Right, right, right.
Which is a good
But
feature.
Now on your jazz, are those two different type of pickups, or are they same and just position?
Oh. You mean from this pickup to this pickup?
Yeah,
those are different.
They are different.
Because
I was curious, you were talking about a deeper sound. If you put the, this one has, I think the split coil makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just curious if you tried the neck pickup of the jazz in that spot next to the, because it would be a deeper sound, wouldn't it?
Well.
The characteristic, would it be?
It's a single coil. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no.
No,
no, it would not, because really what's giving you the deeper sound is the position of the pickup in the instrument. As you move closer to the neck, when you strum these strings, you see that there's more movement here closer to the neck as opposed to here closer to the bridge. And that bigger movement of the string being picked up by the pickup is what's giving you that bigger low end.
Oh, okay.
So you could take that, you would take that pickup and you could put it anywhere. And it's going to take on the characteristic of the positioning in the instrument.
Okay. Have you ever put one together where you had the fretboard pickup?
Neck pickup.
The neck pickup. A net pickup on a P bass, like above another one, so you have the third pickup?
No, I've never done that.
I'm curious if that would make you probably farther up, but... Well, actually, no. Maybe it would. I'm just curious if that would give you even another sound.
I've built a three pickup jazz bass model for a guy in Chicago a few years back,
mm-hmm.
and having three pickups on a bass is kind of overkill. You lose the characteristic of any one pickup.
Really?
Yeah.
Really. So they interact that much?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Now, speaking of pickups. I have to mention this one. Gary brought this one in that you make.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a picture of it. It looks like a humbucker style, but it has the, like the, Well, you describe it. I'll let you describe it.
I call it, it's like the Music Man Stingray hybrid pickup.
Okay.
And what it is one row of magnets, essentially is like the old classic Music Man Stingray from the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then the other coil is basically essentially a Fender Jazz Bass style coil. And you can mix these two together in different ways. And essentially what this gives you is more mid-range. My problem with Music Man basses, a lot of treble, a lot of bass, no mid-range.
Yeah, they scooped.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple guys that, you know, like Louis Johnson would play those things. It would be amazing. But when I'd play it, it just...
Yeah, well, it works for that kind of funk pop. And,
right. So I wanted something. I want to take my Music Man out. I want to play it. So I made this, something that's going to give me more mid-range. It's going to be more like a Fender,
right?
Essentially. So I wired these up with two volume controls so I can control each coil. I could have this Music Man style coil by itself. And when it's by itself, it's actually in the realm of a P bass.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It has that characteristic to it.
Yes. And then when this Jazz Bass coil is by itself, it's like a really thick, you know, rich pickup of a Jazz Bass. And then when I put these together in parallel, both volumes up, you know, it's kind of like a nice Music Man sound, but with a lot of mid-range that will cut through a mix.
So the jazz pickup in it gives you that mid-range, adds the mid-range.
Yeah.
And then you still get the humbucker feel, and it's still clean. That's great.
And you can run both coils together for a hum-canceling
effect
as well.
Okay. And those are still two single coil. They're not split.
Mm-hmm.
And like
if you take
the
cover off, you can see. I mean, it's essentially two pickups under one cover.
Yeah.
Held together with it.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that from anybody. Huh?
No, I. That's an interesting. I got to hear. Yeah, you got to put that on a bass. I got to hear that. I got to hear that because that was a problem with the Music Man. I mean, it was good for a certain thing, that kind of funk thing, but you couldn't use it like a P bass for other stuff. You would lose it.
Yeah. You lose the versatility of the Music Man.
Yeah.
So right now, people who has just the Music Man bass, they cannot expand more. They stuck to the tone, and they need to get another bass to compensate.
Right. They would carry two basses. Yeah. They would carry a P and a Music Man. That's what a lot of my friends did. But now you don't need to do that. You can have the one that does both of them. This is a very cool pickup. This is very neat.
That's why I love working with Howard. He thinks outside the box. You know, he's always coming up with unique designs. He made a couple of real shallow or thin pickups for one of his basses that basically look like Thunderbird pickups.
Ooh.
with chrome covers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those pickups sounded amazing.
Are those like mini humbuckers? Like are the Thunderbird ones like mini humbuckers? Or are they...
Well, for the bass that he made for me, they were Thunderbird covers, but essentially they were another split coil.
Oh, like that. Okay, so it was
similar
like,
to this.
Yeah.
Similar to the P-bass style.
Oh, okay.
So I had a kind of a single coil sound, but hum-canceling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It sounded cool. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really...
Well, I thought the Thunderbird ones on the on their basses, on the Gibson basses, were humbuckers.
Yeah, they were like a more traditional
humbucker.
Coil humbucker.
Now, you also do... besides the now these basses are passive, right? But you also do active electronics. And what's the advantage? Or there's a preamp, right? You have a preamp on some.
I use a preamp, yeah.
Okay. Advantages, disadvantages?
Well, for the modern sound, a lot of guys just want to be able to control their tone from their instrument. I've got a great amplifier. If I want to change my tone, I just turn around and go to my amplifier and change my tone. A lot of guys don't want to do that. They want to be able to control their tone from their instrument. So that's when you put a preamp in there.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And I'm using a preamp now pretty much exclusively unless someone requests something different. I'm using an Audair preamp. He's a guy out of the Washington area that again, thinks outside of the box. He's using...
How do you spell his name?
Audere. And he's building his preamps differently than anybody else. Where mm-hmm. people take the signal and manipulate the tone, he's actually interacting with the pickup itself and using capacitance to change the tone.
Oh, okay.
It's a completely different
right.
unique.
Well, the main thing I remember that a lot of people using Active was to get it without to get less noise. But your pickups, now we're in this room right now, and we have fluorescent lights, and it's not buzzing. It's not buzzing at all. That's impressive.
Well, you know, I mean, when you use a preamp, if you've got noise, what the preamp's going to do is it's going to boost the noise.
Right.
So you really don't get a quieter sound by using a preamp. You get a quieter sound by proper shielding, using good quality pickups. Those are the best way to get...
But like an EMG or some of those pickups, they were designed specifically to be powered. You can't play them. You're talking about a regular pickup, but
right.
I mean a pickup that's designed where it has to have juice going through it.
Right.
It's quieter, I think, if I'm correct, because it's the way it's designed. It's a different design.
Well, they completely take the ground out of the circuit in an EMG pickup. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when you install EMG pickups in an instrument, they tell you you don't need a ground wire.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a completely different way of thinking about how do you manufacture
a
pickup.
But it's not, well, I mean, I'm hearing plenty of tone from here. I don't see the need for the preamp unless you were boosting, if you really wanted to push through cable, you know, or pedal board or something like that.
Some guys just like it. You know, they just want to have that control.
Yeah.
More bass, more boot.
Mm-hmm. So now, again, we're looking at vintage ones. When you do like a modern type of bass, what do you do differently on the bass besides what you did here? Besides the bridge, for example, you might use the hip shot bridge.
I'll use an upgraded bridge like a hip shot. Choice of woods vary greatly with modern instruments. So that's when you start getting into chambered bodies. That's when you get into two-piece bodies where the back will be one particular kind of wood and the top will be a different kind of wood.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, modern basses have a lot of cosmetic aspects to them. So fancy maple tops or, like I said earlier, a Wenge. I built that bass with a Wenge fingerboard. Also had a Wenge top on it, and it had an ash back. And then I use preamps on all of my modern basses. Have preamps built.
What's the advantage of chambering besides the weight?
Well, it's mostly the weight, but I found, you know, to my ear that chambering adds a little bit of natural compression
really?
To an instrument, just a little bit of natural compression. Mm-hmm. But that could be just something I'm hearing that may or may not exist.
And then also, too, is that a different design pickup for those?
Not for me.
You're using the same?
It's the same.
Yeah. The pickups that you saw in that bass at the amp shop, the bass exchange, were made by Howard. And they're pretty much the same, except they were five-string, but they're pretty much the same as the pickup that's on this PJ right now, except a five-string version of it.
Or were they split coil?
They were split coil.
Okay.
Just like this one.
Okay, right.
Yeah, yeah.
You do a split coil on the five string?
Yes.
Yeah. So three and two?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And which way? The upper strings are the three and then the lower strings are the two?
No, the B and E string, they have their own little coil, and then the A, D, and G string have their own coil as well.
And why? It works better? It gives you more?
Through experimentation, that's what I came up with.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very difficult process to come up with that one as well.
Yeah.
It was...
we worked a long time on those pickups to get them right.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
When you have a five-string and it's got the P, the P is the upper one, the lower strings, three, or is it the same thing, the two on the B and the E, and then three on the...
Well, for the P, five-string P, I actually make two. Each segment will have three sets. Well, the bottom one will have three sets of magnets, and the top one will have two sets of magnets and then a set of slugs. So I can wind those coils with the same amount of wire.
Okay.
So they come out even. So essentially, the B and E will have
their own
magnets, mm-hmm. and then the A string will have a slug under it.
And it's not magnetized. The slugs are not magnetized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the D... No, what is that? A?
A. Yeah. A, D, G.
A, D, and G.
So it overlaps.
Yeah.
So you have an overlap at the A string.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, I get you.
But it's a non-magnetized slug.
Right.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
And I've got to say, Howard's got the best vintage-sounding five-string P-bass pickup I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
I use his P-bass pickup exclusively.
Yeah, no, I mean, from what I heard at the store, they're just amazing. Yeah. All of them sounded good, and they're consistent. The other thing I noticed, too, is your necks are consistent. They all have the same type of feel, and they pretty well play this. I mean, you know what you're going to get. It's pretty, you know, it's not like some other guitars that I've tried where the necks are totally different. You know, I mean, it's a consistency that I think is important. It tells, to me, that's a sign of quality if you can make it exactly the same. And it's
well, while I take pride on being a custom builder, I'm still using modern technology, so my necks and my bodies are cut on a CNC machine. Mm-hmm. It just really is the best way to go. And for that very same reason, because you can go from one bass to another, and they're going to feel the same.
Now, all of your basses use the hip shot tuners?
Yes.
Or do you use a more vintage tuner? Or does that affect the sound? Have you noticed any difference?
You know, some people think so. I really haven't noticed that there's a sound difference. There's a theory that more mass on your headstock gives you more tone. I haven't found that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And I use Hipshot exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using their ultralight because most of us are not getting any younger, and we're all looking for lighter weight instruments.
The tuning keys are a little smaller than the older ones, and it's a compact. And they're really accurate. I love the
They're very accurate. I like them better than the Hipshot makes a tuning gear that is a replica of the old school tuning gears that Fender used to use.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're great tuning gears, I like the ultralights better.
Mm-hmm.
And from the front, since I use a half inch post and a clover leaf tuning button, you can't tell that they're ultralights from the front. You have to flip it over and see that they're actually it's a smaller body.
Yeah. Well, no. Looking at it next, he had a jazz bass there with your pickups on there at the store, and you seeing them together, you could see the difference. It's obviously the jazz ones are bigger, but also too. What do you use? Are you using just a standard nut, or do you have you noticed any differences on the nuts, or do you do anything different on the nut?
I use bone nuts.
Oh, the real bone.
Real bone, yeah, and it's been a process finding the right bone the bone that I like. I finally found a supplier that
is that hard to get.
No, bone is not hard to get. Good bone is hard to get.
Okay,
and it does make a difference because a lot of the bone you get from resellers is porous. So while it may cut quickly and easily, it doesn't hold up.
What's the advantage of the bone over some of the plastic ones that they're using? Because a lot of people are using the plastic ones, but what's the difference in the sound?
Well, plastic is dull sounding, real plastic. A lot of people are using corian and other synthetic materials, and they're good, I suppose.
They kill sound.
They can't kill sound? Okay. So, I mean, just because I'm old school, I'm kind of an old fart. I like bone, and I've been using bone since I've been building instruments, and it's never let me down.
And that affects the sustain. I mean, to me, it sounds like that's a key factor of the sustain.
It's a solid sound.
The sound expands, mm-hmm. really, when you're playing it. You'll be in a shop, I'll show some experiment, ask me about that stuff, you will hear the difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's overall, it's support the tone and make it rings better.
Yeah. No, I would never know it, that that's real bone. It's hard to tell anymore because almost everybody's using some type of synthetic.
Yeah.
So, but it's impressive the sound that you're getting from that. We've been talking about the basses. Let's talk just a little bit and touch about the guitars.
Mm-hmm.
Your approach to the guitars. What have you found now? In terms of the vintage, same principle, or is anything else that you're using or different to get that sound?
Well, I have a vintage and a modern model. Mostly I'm making my vintage models, and it's the same approach. I just make them feel like they've already been played for 30 or 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I work the necks. I use bone nut material. I use old school style hardware and traditional pickups. Those are my vintage instruments. Typically, it's alder or ash. I have built some tellies out of roasted wood, and they sound phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
What I found is even with traditional Tele neck pickup, which is that tiny little pickup, and then the regular Tele bridge pickup, you can go from a real twangy country-esque sound to, if you use that neck pickup exclusively and roll the tone down just a little bit, you can get jazz tones out of it. And that's all from this one piece of wood, this alder.
Yeah.
This roasted alder.
And you make those pickups too, the Tele ones?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, no, there actually were players that originally used the Tele and did jazz on them.
Absolutely.
There's a lot more jazz done on them. Most people think they're country guitars, but they actually used them for more than just that.
Right.
And that pickup is a mellow. If you get a good Tele, that pickup is a nice pickup, that bridge pickup. So, and the same approach then, I would presume, on the making of the guitar pickups in the sensor. Do you split coil those too?
No, those are very traditional. Single coil, you know, and I try to wind those as low output as I can.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I find the lower the output. I mean, you can't go too low.
Right.
But you want to get that sweet spot.
You get that tone.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's about string pull, because the higher the pickup's wound, the more magnetism there is against the string, and it pulls the string down, and it doesn't allow the string to vibrate properly. Mm-hmm. So if you're using low output a pickup, the string is going to vibrate more, and you're going to get more sound out of the string.
Right. You're not pulling. Because I've had that. I remember we tried to adjust our pickups on our Strats to get them as close as we could to get more gain, and all of a sudden it would just stick to the magnet.
Boingy, boingy sound.
Yeah, it would just go boing, but it would stick to the coil, the magnet. So you had to pull it back down.
Also, you probably had tuning problems with it, too.
Yeah.
Because when that pickup gets so close to the string, it'll pull the string sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be nice and tuned down at the bottom near the nut, mm-hmm. and completely out of tune when you get to the top end of the neck.
Yeah, it had its own set of problems.
Yeah, yeah, but, unquestionably.
And then the modern ones, basically, do you use a preamp in the guitars or no?
No, no preamp in the guitars. I have, actually, I take it back. I have one model, my WJZ, that I use a preamp in. It is a special design preamp that has a treble boost and a mid-range boost.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's the only guitar I offer with a preamp. Everything else, my modern is, again, the fancy woods.
More the fancy woods. But you still use the lower output pickups, or do you put higher gain on those? Or it depends.
I've been using higher gain pickup, and generally my modern pickups are two single coils and a humbucker in the bridge. So that's another thing that makes it a modern modern.
So single. Oh, okay. So the humbucker bridge and the two. Okay.
Yeah, two single coils, SSH configuration. That's mainly my modern guitars are like that.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting sound. We're almost out of time. Wow. Let's real briefly. Your website is www.wilkinsguitars.com.
Right.
And they can contact you there. Anything, any other contact information? And also for Howard, how would they get a hold of you about the pick? Besides going to the Bass Exchange, of course, because they have the pickups there.
Well, if they want to buy pickups, the best way to go, of course, is to call Gary at the Amp Shop.
Okay.
And then, same thing with basses. If you're in LA, you want to buy a bass from Gary at the Amp Shop.
Okay. So, but they also, too, they can have you custom make it to what they want, too. You can do that, right?
What I do is I try to guide them. Go to the Amp Shop, place your custom order there. Gary will get together with me, and we'll custom make the instrument mm-hmm. and feed it through the store.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. And then, Gary, give them the information for the Amp Shop Bass Exchange.
It will be www.bassexchange.com.
Okay.
Yeah, they can come in and
try. And your phone number, too.
And the phone number is 818-386-5500.
Yeah, if you guys get a chance, if you're in town, definitely go down there and, give yourself 2 hours at least. You'll just be staring at stuff for at least 2 hours. There's so much stuff there. It's amazing. I mean, just the pedals alone.
You'll never know who you might see there at the Bass Exchange, too.
That's true. That's true.
A lot of high-end players come in there.
But they have some great instruments. And these instruments that he showed me, there was like three or four of them, of the Wilkins that he showed me, were just impressive. And you guys will be at the LA Amp Show or the what's it called? It's Lonnie's
Guitar Show.
The Guitar Show. You guys will be there. So if you're in the area for that show, you can try these basses. You'll have some out there for you to play.
Right, and I believe Howard and I and another guy will be at the Guitar Player Live this year.
Bass Player Live.
Yeah. That'll be in October.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well,
and probably the bass hang in June.
Oh, yeah, we'll be doing another bass hang with Steve Araujo in June sometime.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, very, yeah. Very cool. Yeah. No, that's great. I just want to thank you both of you guys for coming on the show. It's a pleasure to have you, and definitely going to have you come back again. I want to explore more of these instruments. They're really well-made instruments, and I'm glad to have you guys both on. And Gary, as always, you're just amazing. You introduced me all sorts of cool stuff.
He's a one of a kind.
Yes, but he's always like, you got to try this out. Yeah. And he's always right on the money.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's turned me on to so many different effects and pedals and the amp we're using right now, the Form Factor. That amp, that's a great, he brought that in on one of our other shows, and I'm using that direct. Actually, grab the jazz bass just a little bit. I want you to play a little bit before we go out, and then I'll take us out, but you got to try this.
You know, one of the things I want to talk about is, while he's switching basses, my instruments, my vintage basses, I use a concentric tone control, which is a volume. It's two tone controls. Instead of your traditional volume, tone, it's a volume, tone, volume, tone.
It's stacked.
Stack pots, right. And what I get out of that is now I can actually use the tones on each pickup effectively. So, for instance, with a jazz bass, I would set up the front pickup all the way on with the treble up all the way, and the back pickup back a little bit with the tone down maybe about halfway, maybe a little bit more than halfway.
Show me how you do it.
Okay, so like this. How it changes the tone. Now I'm bringing up the tone on the bridge pickup. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring the bridge pickup all the way and roll back to the neck pickup. Same bass, and I just use the tone controls to change the sound.
Yeah, it's getting closer to that Jaco sound.
Exactly.
Hit some more of those harmonics, because that's really that sound. That's just a great sounding bass.
And then you can go back to your traditional jazz bass. Same instrument, I did that with the tones.
Response of it, and you know, it's just going straight into the board, but just the strings are just, they just jump out at you. I love that.
Yeah,
the sound of the strings.
You know, the name of the business is Road Tested Guitars, or the name of the instruments is Road Tested, and the reason why I call that is, and Howard and I have the same approach, we're both players. We play live, and we play live a lot, and so we road test our gear by playing live, and that's how I do all my R&D work, is out on stage.
Well, you can tell you guys are musicians because you know exactly what the sound is. It's definitely getting that sound, and that tells you, that just says, yeah, you're players. You know what people need, and that's the bottom line there.
There's no substitute for trying out your gear at the gig.
Right? No, and you guys have the ear, and you know what plays well. You know what's a good neck, what's a good sound, the body, the wood. You got it down, and to me, that's the most important thing. You know exactly, because you've been out there. You know
when you're a player, you meet other players, and you listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
And you take that home with you, and you work on it, and you create something with it.
Yes. Well, we got to go. Thank you guys so much for being on the show, and we'll have you back. And everybody, have a great night. Thank you, Gary and Doug, for coming hanging with me. Have a good night. We'll see you next week.
All right.